dance inside a haunted mansion. Ooh. Just by chance, Frida goes to Nathan Beetleborgs.
Big bad Beetleborgs. Big bad Beetleborgs.
Hey, look now, they're superheroes armed with superpowers.
Who?
Taken from a comic strip, and now they're Beetleborgs.
Beetleborgs.
Hello and welcome to a special bonus episode of Teenagers with Attitude, the one and only podcast that's actually haunted. Now, I know a lot of podcasts, you know, they'll use like fancy special effects or audio editing or something to make themselves seem haunted, but here at TWA, we don't have that kind of money, so we just got an actual specter. I hope that's cool with everyone here.
I have no problems dealing with the ruinous machinations of the dead.
All right, then.
I think that's how you say it.
Something like that. Oh, no, not the dead, though. The unliving.
Is there a difference?
There's a difference for this show, for censorship purposes.
Oh, Jesus Christ, I didn't even catch that.
Yeah.
Also, what the fuck did you dupe me into watching? Goddamn.
Yeah. So, on this show, typically, we watch Power Rangers, but every so often, we want to talk about another show that's kind of along the same lines, and this week, just in time for Halloween... It's early November. We're talking about Big Bad Beetleborgs.
It's part of the entire Halloween season.
Yeah. The Halloween season that runs from one Halloween to the next Halloween.
It's not over till you say it's over.
Just like Alice Cooper says, keeping it alive 365.
I'm your host with the ghost. My name is Mike. And speaking of crazy glam rockers, we've got Matt.
It's me. I'm not a glam rocker, though. I'd be more of like a Megadeth style, like just really solid. What would you describe Megadeth as? I guess they're kind of like just so stereotypically just that's metal. Like you point to like piece cells and it's like that's metal. That's it.
I think that's just metal.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got a returning guest. We've got Greg.
Hey, everybody.
All right. And we have a new friend, because that specter we decided to get was actually kind of a bad idea, we've brought in a paranormal expert on loan from the Atlanta Ghostbusters. Everybody, welcome Joe!
Nice to meet you all. We'll talk about billing later. First off, we just need to see what we have here.
Yeah, well, we're kind of a rinky-dink outfit. You're working for exposure.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Look at his free advertising.
Fuck off, Mike. Not even as a joke.
No, it's quite all right. The city of Atlanta does have us on retainer, and they don't know where you guys record, so I'll fudge up some paperwork.
Oh, well, we appreciate it. All right, and so, Joe, you actually specially requested to be here for when we talk about Big Bad Beetleborg, so can you tell the listener why?
Oh, well, you know, it can get a little bit annoying, especially around Halloween time when people are passing around all kinds of myths about the paranormal. And they get a lot wrong. And, you know, I knew that this show had a paranormal base, you know, the powers and all that stuff. We'll get into that later. So I wanted to clear up any, you know, any confusion or any inaccuracies that may occur when speaking about this particular show.
Okay. Have you ever encountered any kind of paranormal activity where children get superpowers from a comic book?
We're not at liberty to discuss whenever we deal with a minor. That's part of our confidentiality agreement.
Okay, well, has any person gotten powers from a comic book thanks to a ghost?
Not from our franchise, but we did just start. I can ask the Macon crew if they ever dealt with it before we joined in.
Okay, well, yeah, get back to us on that one. And so, usually, listener, at this point, we start talking about the history of the show we're discussing or some interesting facts, but like there is almost nothing out there on Big Bad Beetleborgs. Like we did some digging. We went to, like, you know, wikis and all kinds of stuff, and there's just nothing. This is just a show that happened. It came out, it ran for two seasons, and it ended. And so this show was put together by Saban. It was the third, like, show along these lines that they've done after the hit that was Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. They did VR Troopers, and that was also... That one was released in syndication, but this one, much like Power Rangers, was created specifically for Fox. And aired on Saturday mornings. It first came out in September of 1996. And the tokusatsu that this one was based off of was from the Metal Hero series, just like VR Troopers. It was one called Juku B Fighter, which stood for Beetle Fighter, from what I understand. And we're actually not going to get super into the tokusatsu this week because there's, I'm pretty sure there's no tokusatsu footage in this first episode.
I was thinking about that when watching it. Like, everything had American actors in it, and yeah. And there was no weird cuts to, like, different quality film grain.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see, I think, a little bit in the second one. That's the thing, I'm not even 100% positive about that one. And that kind of speaks to what's so different about this show as opposed to the previous two shows that we've discussed, is they put some real effort into the American half of the show. Like, it takes place in a city called Charterville, and unlike Angel Grove and the unspecified weird place that VR Troopers takes place in, I don't even think we got a city for that. Like, Charterville feels like it's an actual place. Like, there are streets, and there's a comic shop, and a movie theater, and kids, like, ride around on bicycles. Like, it feels like this is a town with actual geography of some sort.
Yeah, it has, like, mountains, like, or hills in the background. It didn't feel like generic suburban California. Like, it looked a little further out, further inland.
Either that, or I'd almost think maybe, like, Eastern Seaboard, almost. It's like a quaint little town.
I thought for a minute, but not quite. I grew up in the New England area, and I knew that it didn't match anything I was used to up there or down here in Georgia or anything in between. But it was close, but I feel like it was closer to the West Coast.
Well, it's a horror setting, so maybe it takes place in Maine. it feels like an actual place, because like, that's something we get into a lot when we talk about Power Rangers, is Angel Grove just seems to be these two buildings and endless park, and then maybe some mountains. I don't know, And then nothing geographically makes sense in VR Troopers whatsoever.
Well, it's in the virtual world.
Yeah, it's in the virtual world.
Anything can happen when you're in VR, apparently. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's the thing. We don't have to deal with VR. We don't have to deal with the morphing grid or anything in this one. Like, it's just, yeah, there's magic, but it all happens in the real world. Like, it's just, what you see is what you get. It's a haunted house and stuff happens.
I mean, the barrier between the ethereal plane and the physical realm is incredibly weak in this town, but other than that...
Yeah, and it seems very highly concentrated in this one house, which makes me wonder what's special about this house? Because it doesn't seem to house any sort of specific haunting. Like, there's just a cavalcade of knockoffs of Universal Monsters living here. Like, what is the deal with that?
It seems like some kind of cross-dimensional nexus. It has, if you notice, the house has all kinds of artifacts all over it. Like, that could be used to channel and center that sort of disturbance or that kind of weak point. Someone may have set that up on purpose, but they never go into it.
Okay. Well, speaking of the house, let's go ahead and just jump into the summary then. We open up at what is called the Hillhurst House, and we start off with two kids running from the house screaming. So these two kids, let's just get into them right now. Their names are Trip and Van. And they're essentially like this show's Bulk and Skull, I guess. But they are terrible.
Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah.
They're on the other end of the socioeconomic spectrum from Bulk and Skull.
Yeah. Well, they're the opposite of Bulk and Skull in a lot of ways. Because, yes, they're the super wealthy rich kids and they're bullies, but they're also like, they're also big nerds, I guess. Like this is the first show I've ever seen where the bullies are bragging about being in the chess club.
Yeah, I was gonna bring that up.
It's a really weird dynamic. Like they're in the chess club.
President of the chess club.
Yeah, president of the chess club, as we come to find out. Their parents own a building, so obviously they have some sort of real estate ties, I'm guessing, so.
Yeah, and Van is the one who's bragging about becoming president of the chess club, and he's played off as the dumb one of the two. Like, yeah. They're both kind of dumb, but the idea is at least, like, not unlike Bulk and Skull and really any bully pairing you'll ever see, one of them is still smarter than the other one, and Van is supposed to be the dumb of the two. And he's the president of the chess club, ? Also, they have a butler that takes them everywhere that we see. Basically, they're running out of the house, and Van drops his cell phone, and this is a late 90s cell phone.
Ooh,
it looks
yeah.
like a rectangle.
I made a note about this thing. Like, it doesn't look like a working cell phone. Like, it looks like one of those ones that should have a bunch of off-brand bubblegum inside of it.
Yeah, this is a toy phone, absolutely. So Van drops his cell phone, and he goes back to get it, and this hand comes out of the porch, like it busts through the wood and grabs the phone. And this hand doesn't look like any of the monsters that we see later. It's just a monster hand. So they run in and get into their limo, and they're like, just let's go, Dudley, fucking step on it, let's bolt. And this limo drives away.
The sound effect for this was so funny, by the way. Like, you hear the tires screeching, and the picture just does not match up with it whatsoever.
Oh yeah, it just casually, you know, scoots away a little bit. So we cut to a sign that says, Welcome to Charterville. And again, like, we get to see this actual... I don't necessarily want to say city, it seems more like a small town.
They specifically say suburbia later, but yeah.
Yeah. So, two kids are bicycling along, and it's Drew, who's kind of our leader of the group, kind of, sort of, not really, and his little sister, Jo. And they're in a hurry to get to Zoom Comics, the comic shop, and meet their friend Roland, who is our third big bad Beetleborg to be.
Call me Magic, is what he says.
Yeah, he's trying to learn to do a magic trick, and he wants the other two to call him Magic. This never comes up again, at least in these first two episodes, by the way.
And he's not even doing magic. Like, he's not even properly tying a knot. He's just fiddling with it, and they're like, wow, you're doing a really good job with that magic trick. It's like, he's not.
Yeah, he's holding a pair of scissors, so I think he's trying to learn that, like, cut the rope and then bring it back together trick.
I didn't see the scissors, but that's definitely what he was doing, because he had a loop of rope.
Yeah, and playing with a knot or something like that.
Yeah, something along those lines. So, Jo is bragging about the fact that her team won a Little League game that they just came from. And I guess something that's, I think, is supposed to be kind of played for laughs... But Jo is sort of the tough one of the group. Like, she's way younger than the other two, and she's the girl, and, like, everything is like, yeah, Jo, she's the tomboy.
Well, that's why she's hanging out with these other two misfits.
Well, she's also related to one of them, which...
Oh, I keep forgetting about that, yeah.
Yeah, like, it is easy to forget, because they're just kind of three kids that run around, but yeah, Drew and Jo are supposed to be brother and sister. So...
And she says that the win was thanks to her supersonic spinball. So I just wanted to say that that was like one of my favorite games on the Genesis.
Yeah. As soon as she said that, my mind just went do.
Although maybe this is in an alternate dimension where it was on the Super Nintendo. Since the supersonic spinball.
Yeah. Oh. Ooh. Mm. Oh, that's yeah, a hell of a mention. Okay.
I was about to say I'm not interested in that alternate universe.
Yeah.
This is the dark one. It's for the one with monsters and haunted houses.
Obviously the one where we should be seeing a lot more people with mustaches and beards.
Yeah, truly Big Bad Beetleborgs is the darkest timeline.
I take exception to that.
Okay, what happens next? Okay, so Jo and Roland are giving Drew shit because Drew has a crush on Heather, who works the counter of the comic shop. And, okay, so I have a question at this point about, like, how old are these kids supposed to be? Because they look and act like they're in grade school, but Heather has a job?
Hold on one second. We may not be skipping ahead, but I don't want to make sure we don't glaze over the entrance of the character Nano.
Oh, no, I don't want to miss that. Like,
okay.
We haven't met Heather yet. I'm just talking about this because, like, they're teasing Drew about having a crush on her.
Okay.
But yeah, like, I'm just confused about how old these kids are supposed to be, because... In VR Troopers, I think it's fairly explicit that they're young adults.
Yeah.
And then in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, like, most of the actors are also adults, but we're told that they're teenagers. I don't think we get an age for these kids. They're definitely children, but again, one of them works at the comic shop, and so I don't know how old they're actually supposed to be.
She's at least 14, they can probably be okay.
Yeah, something like that.
I know that's when I was legal to actually work, even though I was working since I was 12.
Okay. Yeah, see, I was never clear. I knew that stuff probably varied from state to state, but I didn't really know. So, but yeah, as you mentioned, this is where we meet Nano, and this is a sort of a cartoon trope that I really love, is the badass grandma. So Nano is Roland's grandmother, and she comes up. We see the end of a motorcycle race, and she wins, and she's like teasing this guy named Snake about, like, she says, "You call that a race, Snake?" And she's just like, "Oh man, I couldn't keep up with you, Nano. Same time tomorrow." And they high five, and that's about that.
I'd just like to point out, Nano looks like she comes ripping in straight out of Fury Road. Holy shit.
Yeah, Nano's incredible. And actually...
yeah, she's immediately my favorite character.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. She's far and away my favorite character. And I actually found this out. Nano actually wound up... She's had a few appearances on TV shows. Everybody Hates Chris, Malcolm in the Middle, The Shield, the movie The Lady Killers. Don't Be a Menace to South Central While Drinking Your Juice in the Hood.
Mm-hmm.
And but she's also been a contestant on America's Got Talent, where she made it to the final round. She didn't win, but she made it to the final round under the nickname Rappin' Granny.
Oh, God.
Holy shit.
Not to be confused with the Howard Stern character Rappin' Granny. This is a different Rappin' Granny. But yeah, so she was a contestant on America's Got Talent, I guess. So there you go. And she's one of the few actors in this show that I was able to find anything else on. But she's great. Let's see. She walks into the comic book shop, and we meet her son and Roland's dad, Aaron. And Aaron is immediately freaking out at his mom because he got a call from one of their neighbors, I guess. Apparently, Nano just straight up drove through this woman's tomato garden.
Classic.
Kind of makes you wonder what type of a race it was that they were doing to drive through a garden in the first place.
Listen, to win, you got to take shortcuts.
I guess.
Yeah, Nano plays to win. She is not fucking around. So Nano is like, oh, tomatoes. Oh, that reminds me, my chili. And she goes to check on her chili because I guess she just went for a motorcycle race while her chili was cooking.
It's in a crock pot. It's fine.
Yeah, it's a slow cooker. Could work. I do chili in a slow cooker.
Yeah, yeah.
And most people I know do that.
That makes sense. Slow cookers are pretty rad. But anyway, so she runs off and then Aaron, the dad, is like, oh no, mom, you're not getting out of this that easily, and chases her, and they're both off screen. And so Roland and Joe are looking at the magazine racks, and they're looking for the newest issues of the hit comic book Big Bad Beetleborgs. Well, actually, no, the comic book's just called Beetleborgs. I guess Big Bad is just what the show adds. So they're just Beetleborgs, and Drew is kind of trying to fake that he's reading, but really he's kind of staring at Heather behind the counter.
He's reading a ballet magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is
in the comic book shop for some reason.
Yeah, he just sort of absently grabbed it.
Yeah, it's just there with the comic books. And Joe actually calls him out on it. He's like, hey, look, Heather, Drew's reading a ballet magazine. And Drew tries to play it off cool and like, oh, you know, kids say the darndest things. And it's just like, yeah.
And it's
yeah,
like, says the 12-year-old. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
No, he's trying to act grown up. Have you ever met like a young teen or tween that always they believe that they are totally adults and completely more mature than they are given credit for?
I suppose absolutely. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Distancing themselves, saying that they don't like Power Rangers, things like that.
Yeah. And I love what he says to Joe here. He says, smooth move, bratwurst, which. That's a name I've never heard before.
That's almost clever, but like not quite.
Not really. That's an insult you come up with when you're writing a children's show.
Yeah.
And in no other scenario. So he puts away the ballet magazine and he starts actually reading the comic book. And then we have this fantasy sequence.
This fantasy sequence is the best.
Yeah, so we cut to... So Heather is tied to a tree dressed as an old-timey, like, princess from a fairy tale story. Like, she's got the big cone hat and everything. And all of a sudden, he is dressed as the blue Beetleborg. And there are these other, like, tokusatsu-looking monsters. Like, this is not tokusatsu footage, but these are monster designs that look like they're from tokusatsu. And they're, like, on medieval horseback. And they throw ropes at him, and he, like, grabs them and pulls them off their horses.
He's like, ha-ha, just where I wanted you to be.
Yeah. And let's see, the villain tells Heather in the princess costume, nobody can save you. And Drew just goes, well, then just call me Nobody. Which, you know.
Nice Odysseus reference.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what they were going for.
Absolutely. This show's going to get really twisted by the end of this, I guess. So he flying kicks the bad guy, and he goes to untie Heather and gives her a hug, and I guess his costume, like, pinches her or something?
Okay. Because I wasn't sure what was going on, and I had, like, this big underlined, does he just squeeze her ass? Is that, like, a joke that they're trying to make? Like, that cannot be right.
No, I think it's that she gets poked by the spiky beetle armor or something, but she says, ouch, and we get a word balloon, and again, like, this whole thing's set up to look like an animated comic book, but it's live action, and we get all these kinds of word balloons, like, my hero, and it's just a... It's kind of a fun sequence, but it
pulls out and like it shows the panels on the page on the Beetleborgs comic he's reading. I'm just like, this is actually in the comic. Like he's actually like fighting in a medieval setting and like saving a princess, because that's awesome.
Yeah, sure. I mean, why not? We pull back to the real world, and then Trip and Van are coming into the comic book shop. Oh, boy. So we got these guys again. And so Van is asking Trip, who's the flower for? Trip says, it's for Heather, dummy. They walk up to the counter, and they just kind of start messing with Heather. Van tries to steal some candy, and she says, hey, you have to pay for that. And Van says, we don't have to pay for anything. Our dad owns the building, which... I don't think that's how that works.
No.
Like, that still belongs to Roland's dad, who owns the business that's leasing out the building. Like, yeah. That's still...
They've seen too many mafia movies.
Yeah. But in the process, like, Van goes to throw a piece of candy, like, at Trip. I think he was trying to throw it in his mouth. I don't know. But it hits him in the face, and then he swipes his hand and then knocks over Heather's drink all over the counter, which I think she's just drinking water in a soda cup.
Mm-hmm. I do that occasionally. It's not the most dignified thing in the world, but sometimes you're just fucking thirsty and you've got to drink your Wawa.
Yep. Yep.
It's more healthy than drinking soda all day.
Very true.
Oh, absolutely. So she cleans it up. He's like, hey, stop it, guys. We're going to get in trouble. And they say, oh, don't worry about it, Heather. You've got friends in high places. And I'm... Oh, God. And again, I know you're supposed to hate these characters, but whenever they're on screen, I kind of want to vomit. I really hate these kids. I really do.
That was putting it mildly, too.
Yeah, this was about the point where it's like, okay, badass biker grandma was pretty great, but, like, what the fuck is Mike doing making me watch this shit?
Now, what's nice is we're not going to get too much of these guys in this two-parter. I don't know about the rest of the show. I do know for a fact. So this show runs for 2 seasons, and... During the second season, they do kind of the thing that Power Rangers eventually does, where they switch to a different tokusatsu for the second season. But one of the other changes they do going into season 2 is after season 1, these kids leave town. Like, there's some major event or shakeup that happens at the end of season 1, and in the process, these two kids move away. And they get name-dropped toward the beginning of the second season, but that's it. They're just gone.
I like to think that they're friends, quote-unquote friends in high place. Like, one of you mentioned gangster movies before. I like to think that their family's in the mob and that their parents get taken out in a rival mob hit and they have to flee town to
witness protection.
To escape. Yeah, exactly.
I would love that. But that just makes me really excited to eventually see season 2. Because, like, this show's actually pretty fun, except when those two kids are on screen. So... why don't we go ahead and take a quick break, and we'll be back with some more fucking nonsense. Okay, so Drew walks up to try and kind of defend Heather's honor, I guess. Because that's what you do. And Trip is like, well, what do we have here? The three little dorks are reading their infantile Beetleborg comics. Okay, so this is kind of another weird instance of the bullies being nerds. Because we have the bullies in a kid's show using the word infantile.
And they're calling them dorks.
And they're just talking about being the president of the chess club.
Yeah, they call them dorks and dweebazoids and... Like, it's so fucking weird. So, Drew says, don't be such a drip, Trip. Which, like, did they name that character Trip just for this line?
And did they warp back into the 50s?
Yeah. So, Trip says, well, like, this pack of wimpy wannabes, you know, couldn't possibly stand up to us. Like, hey, we dare you to do what we did and spend an hour in the Hillhurst Estate. At that point, like, Heather's like, oh, come on, guys. That place is fucking haunted. Haven't you heard? And Roland is genuinely afraid. Joe is actually excited. She's like, oh, man, yeah, yeah, let's get in there. I want to see some fucking ghouls and goblins.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
but then Drew and Drew, like, he, I don't know if I'm cutting off on this or jumping ahead, but he employs what I've listed in my notes as the McFly gambit and asks if Trip and Van are chicken.
Yeah, yeah. I think they both accuse the other of being chicken at some point.
Yeah, it's sort of weird. Like, who is challenging who here? Like, it sort of it goes back and forth.
I think it's just sort of the weird animosity that just sort of, basically the bottom line, the end of it is all five of them are going to try and spend an hour in this haunted house. The gauntlet has been thrown down, and we basically cut straight to the haunted mansion. We cut to the Hillhurst estate, and we're actually looking at the limo is parked outside again, and Van is playing chess against Dudley while Dudley is cleaning the windshield of the limo. And he says, like, checkmate, Dudley. And he just goes, if you say so, Master Van. Like, I love how this butler's fucking sass. Like, he knows that these two little shits are just terrible, but it's a living.
Yeah, he just humors them.
Yeah, totally humors them just to, you know, hope that maybe someday something will happen.
Yeah. Heck, I think that's why he's willing to keep driving out to this haunted house. He's hoping these little shits get themselves killed, I think.
They're paying him a mint, probably.
Oh, I'll bet the dad and mom, like, they just can't. Well, we only ever hear about the dad, but their parent, possibly plural parents, just hates these two kids and is more than willing to send them to their inevitable death.
As long as it's under plausible deniability circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, what could we have done? They went to the haunted house. And speaking of which, so our three heroes roll up on their bicycles, and they bicycle everywhere in this show. In, you know, it's like, hey, we wouldn't fucking miss this for the world, you assholes. And I know I'm adding a lot of swears, but I kind of feel the need to. But so they go up the stairs and they open the door and walk in, and behind them, like, the porch light turns itself on. And I guess that's supposed to be spooky, although these days, like, automatic porch lights are just kind of a thing.
And there's a bunch of cartoon eyes up in the window with nothing behind them, because you can clearly see through the glass into the house. Yeah. Like, it's a real house. It's not just a facade or anything.
It's haunted glass.
Yeah. So
that doesn't usually happen. Glass doesn't conduct much.
Okay.
I'm just trying to be a ghost expert here. Sorry.
What does it not conduct much of?
I mean, I guess you could have ectoplasm on the outside, but that would show up. You know, it's usually you know, it's all energy, and energy doesn't travel through glass all that well.
Okay.
Well, I guess fiber optic would work.
Would they put fiber optic in the windows of a haunted house?
Maybe, well, hold on.
If this house was designed to be haunted, like, I've got a running theory that this was designed to both focus and amplify psychokinetic activity.
Well, I have a theory here, and just shoot me down if I'm wrong, because I'm not really, you're the expert here, not me, but what if it's not glass? Because this house was very clearly made to kind of, like, house supernatural beings, so could there be some sort of alternative material that's more conductive for, what would you call it, like, spirit energy?
Actually, yeah. The New York crew has been worked on some of that, where it was a transparent containment unit for the class 5 that they caught at the Sedgwick Hotel. The big green slimy guy. They had him, like, on display in a glass container, now that I think about it. Now, I think they just projected a field across the glass for a bunch of conduits, but
how did they ultimately domesticate that guy? Because that's what I'm curious about.
Oh no, that was just marketing. Like, that was just to sell merchandise. He is not domesticated. He is a fucking monster.
Okay. side note to the listener: we are eventually going to do an episode on real Ghostbusters because we have to.
Oh yes, yeah. I have the whole box set. I would be happy to weigh in.
Do we wait until next Halloween to do that, though?
Maybe. That might be a good time to do that.
I was actually thinking about wanting to start up a podcast on my own just so I could discuss it, but if someone else is willing to do all the hard work, then be my guest.
We might do it sooner. I don't know if I want to wait that long.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
If you want to do the Christmas episode where they bust the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future, I'm game to talk about that hot mess.
Actually, yeah.
We've been looking for awesome suggestions for Christmas specials and things to do this December, because we want to do a holiday special sometime. And the only other suggestion we've gotten is the Star Wars special, and we don't want to do that.
No.
So that might be the best suggestion we've gotten so far.
I have actually never seen the Star Wars holiday special.
I haven't either.
I saw it a long time ago, and I'm not sure I remember it right, because holy fucking shit.
I've seen it once with commentary, and once with, like, an MST3K style, no, sorry, once on my own, and once with an MST3K style commentary. And, yeah, never again. I've seen enough.
Okay. Well, speaking of seeing enough, so they walk into the lobby of the Hillhurst Estate, and Roland is immediately like, man, this place is a mess. It's worse than my bedroom.
Yeah, same. That was my immediate knee-jerk reaction right there, which says a lot about me as a person, I like to think. Or maybe don't like to think and will just admit to. I don't fucking know. Says something.
Yeah, so the five kids, like, the bullies reiterate that the bet is who can stay for an hour, which eventually it just kind of becomes who sticks around longer, I guess. But, like, I guess the hour is, like, the time limit where it's like, okay, if everyone manages to stay for an hour, I guess we just win, because at that point, it's not, there's no point in sticking around.
It's not even the traditional stay overnight bet, which is disappointing.
Well, I mean, there's no, like, you know, dead relative who left them the house in a will or anything. Like, this is just a dare.
Yeah, but people do that anyway.
Let's see, our heroes go up the stairs, and they point out this painting of two birds, and like, wow, that's a spooky painting. Those birds look so real. Which, what's spooky about birds? I mean, I know,
like, doves, nonetheless. It's not even, like, just, like, ravens or owls or anything that you would stereotypically associate with, like, spooky mansions. It's white doves, like John Woo-style white doves.
Yeah, like, they're doves that you'd see in, like, a magic trick.
Or a wedding or something like that.
Like, now I'm going to pause at something here. Like, you don't actually know what the characters are seeing. The camera might not be picking it up. You know, it can be from their angle. Maybe that is a really spooky painting. Have you ever been to the Haunted Mansion at Disney World? You know, things can change depending on your perspective.
Okay, so you went with, like, a lenticular image. Okay, because I thought you were going into, like, Luke's morphing grid theory stuff for a second there, and I was
with Luke's fucking morphing grid theory, god damn
it. I love Luke's morphing grid theory.
Oh, god.
Is that going to become a thing, where it's like, what side of Luke's morphing grid theory are you on?
No, it's simply the exercise of coming up with something ludicrous and then trying to fit all of the puzzle pieces into the wrong shape puzzle. I love that kind of stuff.
This is eventually when sales are down and we need to have a big, like, mini series event for Teenagers with Attitude. That's going to be our civil war. It's fucking just
morphing,
like,
grid theory.
Yeah,
team grid.
After they go up the stairs and they point out how spooky the picture of the birds is, behind them we get this shot of, like, so we start seeing the picture frame, like, from the side, and someone clearly throws these birds out of the picture. And it's great, because it's not like they majestically fly out. It's like, oh, they came to life. No, it's like someone fucking tossed these birds, and then they fall down while flapping their arms, like, desperately trying not to hit the ground. It's actually kind of grim, but there you go.
I was just about to say, if this were a movie, would we have the credit saying two doves may have been hurt during the making of this film?
Are you implying that those doves are dead? Well, those doves are obviously dead as shit, because it's been like 10 years, 20... Oh my god, how long has it been since this thing has been on television?
19 years, I think.
Oh, yep. don't tell me things like that, because I remember...
This show came out in 96, bro.
Oh...
Yeah, soak that in. Soak in the inevitability of death.
I think that's when I got my first Sony PlayStation.
Oh, man. So
fuck.
Yeah, so speaking of the inevitability of death, so the bullies are putting, like, they're talking about their plan to sort of scare away our three heroes. They've brought with them some masks to wear and basically be monsters. And this is where we get our first, like, unliving instead of dead. Because Trip says, okay, Van, are you ready to raise the unliving? And unbeknownst to them, walking behind them is Frankenbeans.
That, which is a great name.
Awesome name. Awesome name.
He's basically the knockoff Frankenstein's monster, although really he looks more like Frankenberry.
The actor sells it, too. Like, that's a weird mask and outfit to be wearing, but he really emotes with his mouth, and I appreciate that.
Yes.
Yeah, like, I've actually talked to some people about this show, and they've kind of complained about the whole haunted house aspect, but, like, that's the best part of this show.
That's the only good part of this show. and Nano.
Like, we're gonna get to the other monsters in a bit, but, like, the monsters are great. And Frankenbeans, he actually doesn't do much in this shot. He just walks behind them, and the gag is, like, they don't notice that the monster is right behind them.
I'm not gonna lie. Until you guys just pointed it out, I didn't catch this either. So, again, I don't know what this says about me.
You didn't notice the monster?
I really didn't. I swear to God.
Oh, man. So this is like that experiment where they asked some people to watch footage of a basketball being tossed back and forth. And, like, they told people to count how many times it happened. And then meanwhile, in the footage, they just at some random point had a man in a gorilla suit walk by. And when they asked the people, like, so, hey, when did you notice the gorilla? And they're just like, what gorilla?
Yeah.
Like, almost universally, because you miss things if you're not concentrating on the background.
Yeah.
Guess who wasn't concentrating on the background, I guess. Oh, Lord.
Just return.
That's how a lot of paranormal stuff gets by most people, is that they're focused on their normal lives. Their brain just filters it out.
Yeah. It's like the somebody else's problem field in Hitchhikers.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, while all this is happening, Joe is digging through a closet, and she, like, finds, like, oh, she finds, like, a birdhouse and a bunch of other, like, trash, and she's like, oh, it's just a pile of junk. And then this mummy wakes up and says, gross, I can live with, but junk? That's just not right. And Joe is just running away screaming, because, like, okay, so he starts off as a mummy. But then he, like, and his name is Mums, by the way, so he's definitely supposed to be a mummy, but he pulls off all the wrapping and, like, the sort of Egyptian regalia he has around his neck, and then he just kind of puts on a cloak, and he's just kind of a weird Grim Reaper skeleton man.
And we don't even see him put it on. It's like it cuts to her running, and then all of a sudden it's dude in a cloak that looks absolutely nothing like him, and you're like, what? Did he have it under the wrapping?
Yeah.
Is he an unwrapped mummy dressed as the Spectre of Death, or is he the Spectre of Death who is dressed up as a mummy normally?
I think he's supposed to be a mummy who changed costume, because, again, his name is Mums, but that kind of begs the question, why couldn't he just be a mummy?
Yeah.
He might be under paranormal witness protection.
So wait, if there's a paranormal witness protection, does that mean there's also, like, a paranormal mob as well? Possibly more than one?
Uh-huh. Well, there's at least one. I think it's Al Capone's ghost is one of the leaders of it. Anyway, that's a whole terrible comic book that I won't go into.
Okay. Did he ultimately get busted for ghost tax evasion?
I read the first issue, and he got a bunch of poltergeists to machine gun the Ghostbusters to death, and I was like, yeah, no, I'm gonna stop reading this bullshit.
Oh, wow.
I really wish they hadn't signed off the comic book rights to whoever would pay them the most money. I blame Venkman.
Yep, I would blame Venkman as well. So Joe's running around screaming, and then Trip and Van, the bullies, they hear her screams and just kind of laugh it off. It's like, ha ha ha, those scaredy cats are somewhere else in the house being frightened by nothing in particular. And so they put their masks on and leave the room, and, like, behind them a suit of armor burps.
That suit of armor is, like, seriously 6 inches shorter than the kids are.
Yeah.
Like, is this child armor?
It might have been.
It might just be decorative.
Wait, haunted decorative armor?
Yeah.
Haunted decorative child armor, no less.
Well, it doesn't look functional.
Is that why it can't really move despite being haunted? Is it's not functional?
Yeah, I mean, ghosts inhabit inanimate objects all the time. That could have just been something that was bought from a yard sale.
Oh, so we have an actual haunted house, and that's, like, the one fake Halloween prop in the whole place? Is this burping suit of armor?
Yeah, people just probably threw whatever looked, like, possibly haunted into this house. Whoever set this thing up was just trying to concentrate as many items as they could.
Yeah. So, Drew and Roland, like, hear Joe screaming and run up to meet her. They actually burst in through a door from out of frame and slam it in Mums' face. And they're like, Joe, what's wrong? And then they turn around and they see...
No, is that Mums' face, or is that... Yeah, I'm not watching along with you guys, but they do slam it in the next monster's face.
Oh, yeah, two monsters get a door in the face.
Okay.
So, but this is Mums. Mums get... Because he's chasing Joe. So Mums takes a door to the face, and then Drew and Roland see him, and they're like, oh, fuck, and then they all just start running away from Mums. And he's muttering about, like, kids, I hate kids, no respect for the unliving. And the kids, like, they sort of manage to elude him, like, they go into a room and, like, hide behind a couch, I think. And this is where Mums runs into Frankenbeans. And Frank, like, he's asking Frankie for help, and Frankie is being like, I don't have brain power, my brain is not working. and Mums, and like, and this is nice, does him a little bit of a favor, grabs Frankie by the head and shoots lightning at him.
It just gives him an int buff right there.
Yeah, just basically gets his brain working again. And do, like, possessed mummies, can they normally shoot lightning?
That's why I'm not sure that he's actually a mummy. Like, I think this whole mummy thing is a cover story. I think he's got more going on that he doesn't talk about.
Oh, do you think maybe he's only been dead for, I don't know, maybe 100 years or so, and he just really liked ancient Egypt?
I think he really liked ancient Egypt, and he might be a lot. He might be even older than he says he is. Like, he is exhibiting the closest I can compare him to is a lich. Like, he's a reanimated dead body that retains his intelligence and is able to wield arcane magic, which is super rare. Like, he's not using psychokinetic energy. Like, he's firing lightning out of his fingertips, and he's increasing the intelligence of this. This flesh golem that happens to live in the house along with him, who he seems to get on with just fine.
Okay.
I'd say this is just full on magic wielding. It's not even ghostly powers.
Okay. So after he gives Frankie a boost, Frankie thanks him, and then Mum tells him, like, "Hey, help me catch these children, and I'll let you keep one for a pet." And at this point, we hear Trip and Van. By the way, like, who names their kids Trip and Van? Like, that's
hippies usually, but their parents are rich,
I guess. But like, yeah, the more like, it didn't really hit me until I said their names like 500 times doing the summary. But like, those are really weird names. I just, yeah, God, George, everything about them is awful.
George, okay, Carlin, so would have been rolling in his grave with those names.
Yeah, he might be rolling in his grave in this house. We don't know. Everyone's here. So,
that might have just been a board meeting, like, let's make up the most hateable villains possible, and they just went overboard.
Yeah, they went way too far. So Trip and Van decide that so they can see better, they're going to, like, turn their masks around and then, like, walk backwards to scare the kids, I think. And so they walk into this room where the others are hiding, and they bump into Frankie, and they realize that Frankie is holding Van's cell phone, and they demand it back. And Mom, like, talks some shit, is like, "Well, then come and get it," and they jump at Trip and Van, and Trip and Van are just like, they turn tail and run. They're out, they're gone. They run all the way out of the house. Oh no, they don't run out of the house yet. My bad. We'll get to that. But they run out of the room, and the kids are hiding, they're trying not to blow their cover, and then Joe notices that there's a spider on Roland's leg.
A tarantula.
Yeah, it's a tarantula. So, like, not even a particularly, like, harmful spider or anything. Like, this is a spider you get as a pet. And they're like, "Oh god, a spider!" And they freak out, and the spider, you know, runs out into the middle of the room. Frankie picks it up and eats it.
That's unnecessary.
Which is nice. I kind of think that's a good touch there. That's a monstrous thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then Mum calls them juvenile delinquents, and the chase is on again.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie, the last time I heard the phrase juvenile delinquent said in that sort of context was Jet Set Radio Future.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's actually the last time I heard that phrase. It was weird fucking blast from the past.
Yeah.
Well, it's just because you became an adult and then no one could call you that anymore.
I guess that's true.
It's another reason why, yep. Like, I don't buy Mum's whole ancient Egyptian nonsense. Like, he's clearly got a California accent, so he's he's been around. I don't know what his deal is.
I would love it if, like, again, the scenario where everyone else in this house is a real monster and Mum's is just a dude in a suit.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Like, he's just Jane Goodalling it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But how would that explain the zapping of Frankenbeans then? Like, his
tasers.
He could just be a living mage in a mummy suit.
I suppose.
Although, I mean, if you're a wizard, wouldn't you just be happy being a wizard?
How do you think he got his powers? He probably does it by studying these monsters.
That's true. That could be.
He just lives with them for a while. He learns their secrets, their social cues, and their magical incantations, and then eventually he'll move on.
So the kids are freaking out about, you know, running from these monsters, and they bump, I think, like a bookshelf.
Yep.
And then we get the old fashioned haunted house spinning wall gag, which we'll get a few of. And I love a good old fashioned haunted house spinning wall. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so it spins around, and Frankie gets his finger caught in the wall as it closes, And we get some really funny physical comedy here as he's just going, oh, my finger!
Man, I don't know I'd call that funny. Like, that dude's finger, it's established that it gets straight up torn off by that door, and I'm like, ooh, ow, fuck.
Well, I mean, that's what's great, is like, we hear the audio of him going like, my finger fell off! And Mum going, stop being a baby, we'll sew it back on later. Because... I mean, he's a Frankenstein. Like, we could he could just put him back together.
Yeah, but he sounded really agitated. Like, that shit probably really hurt.
He kind of just always sounds like that, though.
I think that was more of a more mental stress or emotional turmoil than physical. I don't know that he feels pain.
Man, I hope so, because, like, oof, that could get him.
I mean, he seemed all right with getting lightning in his head, so...
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, does bring up a good point there.
These kids are in the secret hallway... And then a bunch of bats fly in, and then Drew gets separated from the other two. We kind of see him wandering around for a while. And then he finds another spinning wall, and instead of just turning around once like most spinning walls, this one just starts spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning, and he's just on the ride.
Yeah, I want to see the floor plan of this house.
Yeah, I don't know how any of this works. I guess these kids are going to end up somewhere that whoever put this house together really wanted to make sure would be very hard to find. And we'll find out why in a little bit here, but...
Yeah, some Ivo Shandor, like, non-Euclidean architecture.
So Drew ends up in a room with the other two kids. Like, they get separated and then reunited again really quickly. Like, they're separated for all of about 30 seconds, I think. And Joe notices an organ in the side of the room, and it's like, whoa, look at that organ! That looks so cool! Meanwhile, and... This is where we sort of see the last of Trip and Van for the episode. They're running down a hallway. They open a closet, I guess, looking for the way out. And inside, we see Count Fangula.
That's his name.
On a telephone. And he says, I'll have to call you back. My lunch just arrived. And he jumps at them, and they quickly close the door on him. And run away. So, and at that point, like, Trip and Van, like, they're just gone. At that point, they're actually gone. They run out of the house.
And at this point, we can also say that apparently doors and doorways are the most effective weapons against the unliving in this show.
Yeah.
And this is a vampire, and they have a weakness to solid wood like that. So that makes sense in his case.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. But anyway, so Frankie walks by and hears Count Fangula kind of screaming in a weird muffled voice because his fangs are stuck in the door. So Frankie opens the door and Count Fangula kind of pulls himself off of the door, but his fangs stay in the door, which is actually kind of unsettling.
No, that's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Like, I'm putting my fingers on my own canines right now, just thinking about that part.
God, yeah, that's... So back down in the super secret room, Joe, Drew, and Roland are hearing Trip and Van screaming and running out of the house. And they're like, hey, yeah, they lost the bet. And then Joe, like, being smarmy, leans on the organ. And some crazy shit is about to happen, so why don't we go ahead and take another break, and we'll be right back.
You know me, the fighting freak Knuckles, and we're at Pumpkin Hill. You ready? I ain't gonna let it get to me, I'm just gonna creep.
Joe leans on the organ, and the kids jump back, and we see these weird, like, warping special effects, and a little bit of smoke and lightning. And out of three of the pipes pops the pipettes, these three tiny, sort of multicolored women who I suspect might all be played by the same woman.
No, they're the same person, tripled up.
I would say so.
And they say, we're the Pipettes, and we proudly present, back by popular demand, let's hear it for the magic, phenomenal, flabulous, super phasm from the seventh dimension. Here's Flabber! And so, Flabber comes out, and the special effect for this is that we're just seeing him from the shoulders up, and he's spinning around, and they add a whole bunch of sparkle effects, and he, like, flies around the room. Like, clearly to get this footage, they just kind of green screen the actor sitting in a chair spinning around. But yeah, so he twirls around the room. He's just laughing crazy and just it's wacky and nutty, kids.
And the kids don't give a fuck. Like,
yeah.
The three kids do not react to this at all. Like, they didn't even run into the monsters, and they're jaded as hell.
He basically he jumps out and he starts dancing around and goes, "Happy Flabber Day. Who loves ya?" Like, he's okay, so his outfit, it's this crazy, I'm not even sure how to describe it. He's like a half mix between...
He's a sea admiral by way of Liberace.
Yeah, he's got kind of a rockabilly court jester thing going on.
Almost like a clown Elvis impersonator.
Yeah, yeah. And when this guy starts talking, he's a guy who really, really wishes he was Robin Williams.
I was just thinking absolutely. That too when I watched it. I'm like, you know who would have been perfect for this role, but would have been way over the pay grade is Robin Williams. Robin Williams would have been perfect for this role.
This is several years after Aladdin had come out, so semi-incorporeal being with like the misty half body, like that's ADD and constantly jumping between personalities. They couldn't grant wishes.
And he makes pop culture references he should have no knowledge of. Yeah, and also, although we'd be remiss to point out that as far as his face goes, he's given like a giant nose and a giant chin.
A Jay Leno chin.
Yeah, he looks like a ghost. The ghost of Jay Leno if he was trying to be an Elvis impersonator, I guess.
And trying to do a really bad Robin Williams impression.
Yeah, like he is a mishmash of crazy things. And he can get kind of obnoxious, but he's also like still kind of the best part of the show. It's weird. Like I could see a kid really liking this character. I could.
He's the character I remembered the most when you were talking about doing this, or when I was thinking about doing this show or suggesting it. I think you had already mentioned it in one of the podcasts, but he's the one guy I remembered, which is why I decided that I should maybe jump in to share my expertise. But then when I watched it again, oh man, like so many things that I had just blocked out.
Let's be clear here. Like I'm not going to read all of the dialogue of this scene because there's a ton of it, because he talks a lot and he speaks like really rapid fire again. Like it's the genie from Aladdin thing. He's just going to riff and riff and riff and riff. So he jumps out and he says, "I'm free, fat free, carefree, and home free." And then we get a thank you very much, Elvis style at some point. And he grabs a broom and he plays it like a guitar and the pipette starts singing. And then he tells them to pipe down because they're cramping his style. And like, and again, he's bouncing around, he's bebopping and scatting all over the room, and eventually the kids are the ones that get sick of it first. Like, Joe actually says, "That's it, I've had it, I'm out of here," and then the boys agree.
Yeah, this is stupid, I'm done, what do we sign on for?
Which I kind of like that the kids were thinking exactly what I was thinking at the time.
Well, he describes himself, I don't know if you're about to hit this part or not, but he calls himself a phasm from the seventh dimension. So when I was thinking back on this guy, I was imagining him as a class 3, maybe class 4, full torso apparition or free repeater, like just, a human-shaped ghost that has its own identity, its own personality, its own name. It can have a conversation with you, which would probably make it a class 4. But, like, he's apparently an extra-dimensional being who can grant wishes.
Yeah.
And then he describes himself, a phasm is a super cool being able to work extraordinary feats. So he's gone fully to class 7, interdimensional deity mode. He can affect reality, which might be the reason why he was locked up in the first place.
Yeah, I kind of wonder who trapped him in this organ to begin with. Were they malicious, or were they just someone who got fed up with his nonsense? Because he doesn't actually seem threatening. Like he seems to be an actually like nice guy. He's just annoying.
But what would happen if he got bored? Like if those kids weren't there for him to channel himself around, like to grant their wishes, help them out. Like if it was just him in that room with the three pipettes, like he might do something drastic just to shake things up.
Yeah, maybe. Although he also seems lonely because they start to walk out of the room and he starts stretching his neck out like a snake, and this is a bad special effect, and it's terrifying. But he's like, wait, don't leave. And he flutters his eyelashes at Roland, and Roland faints. And Drew and Joe kind of wake him up, and he's like, "Man, I just had the weirdest dream."
"Five more minutes, Mom."
Yeah, he says, "Five more minutes, Mom." And then he notices Flabber, and he's like, "Whoops, still dreaming," and then passes back out again for a moment. And then Flabber says, "Well, I've been called a dreamboat before, but this is definitely not a dream. Flabber's the name, magic and music's my game, and I'm the most phantasmic phasm you'll ever meet. and the kids ask him what a phasm is, and he explains. And then he does sort of an off-brand rendition of I Feel Good with a giant comb, and then it turns into a giant phone, and then he says sorry, wrong number, and then fake hangs it up. And again, this is a giant novelty plastic phone receiver thing. And then the pipettes are like, oh, he's really losing it. He's having another identity crisis. And they tell him to snap out of it. He, you know, shakes his head. He does the thing, the yabba 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 kind of thing. And
there you go. Rubber face.
Yeah. It's hard to do that. I can't shake my head without messing up my headphones, you know. But you know what I mean. Like that.
Yeah, you got it across.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So he wants to grant the kids a wish for setting him free. And Joe's like, well, like, in that case, I wished for us to get out of here. And Roland agrees, and they both start to go. And then Drew kind of has other thoughts. He's like, wait a minute. A wish, you say? And Flabber, like, takes out a book and starts listing off things that they could wish for. It's like a new bicycle, a treasure chest, a pet Kinkachu. And he points at Joe and says, I know you've always wanted an iguana. And Joe says, well, how did you know that?
Yeah, he's telepathic. That's another warning sign.
Yeah, he's telepathic. He appears behind them and says, and he like summons a birdcage with a parrot in it and says, this little bird told me so. And the parrot goes, I did not. And so the kids kind of huddle up together. Like they have a debate. It's like, okay, what are we going to do? And then Joe says, if this is a dream, let's make it a good one. Let's be superheroes. And she grabs the Beetleborgs comic book, which I guess Drew has in his pocket. I don't think it's actually been in his pocket this whole time. Like, I don't think we've seen it until this point.
Yeah, I was going to say, he wasn't running around with it earlier.
Yeah.
And maybe he rolled it up and stuck it in his waistband.
They decide, like, well, let's go for it. I mean, nothing's going to happen anyway, because this is a dream. And so, like, we wish to be Beetleborgs. And Flabber doesn't know what that is. And again, it's weird, because, like, he knows modern jokes and gags and pop culture references, but also doesn't know modern stuff at the same time. Like, they still have to show him the comic book. It's kind of inconsistent. So he looks at the comic book, and here's what is the least believable thing in this show, I think. Like, of all the fucking ghouls and goblins running around, and the magic, and the kids, and just running around doing stuff kids would never do, and the motorcycle grandma, and the bullies that are nerds but are still somehow bullies, and just all that stuff, this is the most unbelievable thing. He looks at the front page of a comic book, a popular comic book around children, and in the bottom right corner of the front cover, there's just a drawing of some rats, and just the words, RATS! Inside!
No, it says, I think it says, like, in the next issue, rats, or something like that.
Really?
I'm not looking at it right now, but it was something along those lines.
It's the front cover of a comic book is advertising the fact that it's got rats in it. Which, okay, like, sure, yeah. And so he's like, okay, got it. And then he zaps the kids, and in this really, really bad computer effect, like, it's real bad.
Oh, yeah.
They turn into rats.
Oh, he can't. And he can't help it, man. Like, this guy is clearly a djinn.
Yeah, yeah, he's...
Like, I cross-referenced all of the books that I had on hand, and, yeah, definitely... This guy is definitely a djinn. He has to make a wish go bad in order to, you know, to keep his powers.
Well, that would explain some stuff that's also going to happen in the next episode, but we're not going to see any of that because as soon as these kids turn into rats and start freaking out about the fact that they're rats now, we get to be continued.
Dun, dun, dun.
And I'm going to be honest, I kind of want to see, like, just an alternate universe version of this show where, like, this sticks. Because, like, we're going to get to the next episode and it'll turn out it was just a quick gag and he'll turn them back almost immediately. But I kind of want to see the show where it's like, well, now these kids have to adjust to being rats in a haunted house. That's life now.
It's called the witches.
Well, it's oddly enough, in the second season, they're not rats, but they do get a power to turn into bugs.
Wait, witches? What?
I know the movie as The Witches, but it might have a longer title. But yeah, where the kids get turned into mice.
Oh.
Yeah, a bunch of witches. It's freaky. It was from the 80s at least.
I seem to recall seeing something like that. Maybe. I don't remember though. I don't think I've seen it.
Oh, I think I remember it. Who was the actress who played Morticia in the first Addams Family movie? Oh damn.
God, who was that?
Oh wow, no, never mind. It wasn't the 80s. It was 1990. But it is called The Witches.
No, but
Angelica Houston. It was Angelica Houston, I think she was in it, wasn't she?
Yeah, it's based on a Roald Dahl book, because, you know, there's talking mice. Was it's Angelica Houston.
Yeah.
Did she play Morticia in the Addams Family movie?
In the first one, I think she did.
Okay. I'll have to Wikipedia that a little down the line, because that's going to bother me.
And it was the year afterwards, and also Addams Family Values.
Oh, okay. I couldn't remember if she did the second one or if they had switched it up, but I do remember her in the first one.
Did witches also have a bit of music by Coolio?
I wish.
Just fucking remember that the Addams Family movie was like, fucking Coolio, just do what they want to do. Addams Family. God, that was such... All right, so anyway, so this episode ends with them being rats, and it's a cliffhanger, and it's a big scary thing. And we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with our final thoughts, because this is a lot to process. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back. Final thoughts, guys. I mean, we talked about this a little bit off the air of like how weird it is that this is where the show chooses to put its cliffhanger, is essentially in the middle of one of the quick gags.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that I made a note, just like, wow, like this was where they chose to end the first episode, huh?
That's how you're gonna hook them, is the kids turn into rats and to be continued.
I mean, I would have kept on watching. There was a ghost involved and I hadn't gotten to see enough of him yet, but
yeah. Like, but that's the thing is, like, with the exception of that weird dream sequence, we don't see any Beetleborgs.
Yeah, I was just about to say, like, we only get, like, one small tease of, like, these, like, this is supposed to be a superhero show. I mean, like, first episode of Power Rangers, we had a good chunk of Power Ranger. Like, we really haven't gotten any Beetleborg here.
The villains haven't even shown up at all. They haven't been shown at all.
And we'll get to them for the next one, because they're all over the second half, and they're great.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, with Power Rangers, you could definitely make the argument that the first episode is way too rushed, like a lot of that show is. Mm-hmm. But, like, something else we kind of discussed, like, during the break is that VR Troopers, like, something George talked to us about when he was here for the bonus episode for that, was that originally VR Troopers aired its first, like, the two-parter. It just aired it back-to-back as one continuous, like, hour of television. And so, like, do you think maybe that happened with this?
There's no way it didn't happen like that, because I wouldn't have watched the second episode.
Yeah. It would make sense.
I'm contradicting myself what I said a minute ago, but yeah, I probably wouldn't have cared.
And they probably would have advertised it, too, as, like, this big, oh, see the one-hour premiere of Beetleborgs, and, you know, it would have been, like, back-to-back episodes or something along those lines.
That's definitely something that they'll do. So let's get into the question I like to ask all our guests when we do a bonus episode, and I think I'll start with Greg, because you technically already answered this question. Like, having watched this, would you watch more?
I know 13-year-old me did. Me now, since I'm sort of going back, and it's been years since I saw it, and I'm not going to date myself with it, but I definitely at least would check out the second episode just because I'd want to see the actual Beetleborgs and try and relive what it was like with them.
All right, so Matt, how about you? Having watched this, would you watch part two? And I know, and like, you know, all cards on the table, listener, most of us already did go ahead and watch part two. I think Matt's the only one who didn't.
I would probably watch part two, but I'm not expecting a lot from it. I wasn't super impressed with the first episode of this show, which is weird because it's not really even, like, bad. It's just...
This is the kind of show where for a lot of people, like, being bad makes it more entertaining.
Yeah, because like,
that was why you were so on board after
VR Troopers episode 2 is amazingly awful. Like, just the warped anti-logic that show lays down is incredible. It's awful, it's terrible, and I loved every second of it. this is just, like, it's not even, like, bad enough to really make fun of. It's like, yeah, this is a show for seven-year-olds, and it seems okay as a show for seven-year-olds go, but, like,
I almost feel like the demographic for this show was aimed a little bit younger than maybe what Power Rangers would have been.
Do you think so?
Yeah, actually. No, I actually got that impression with, like, the bang and the pow and the comic book sequence and the fact that the protagonists are, like, actual kids as opposed to, like, quote-unquote teenagers with attitude.
Yeah. That gives it away in a big way. Like, I think they were trying to capture a younger, newer audience to it that maybe, you know, weren't jumping into Power Rangers at this point.
Well, so how about you, Joe?
Yeah, I've gone back and forth saying I wouldn't already in this conversation, I realize, but I think I would watch it for the haunted house, like, to see where that plot line was going. But the main characters weren't doing a thing for me.
All right. That's kind of where I am. Like, I would definitely keep watching this. I mean, I did go ahead and watch part two, and we'll talk about where we get with that next time, which I think is kind of a running theme. Like, this is something we also ran into with VR Troopers, is everyone watched part one and then said, you know what, I'm going to watch part two at least to see what happens. And then after that, that's when everyone kind of came to the conclusion of, like, okay, am I going to keep watching this show? And some people said yes, some people said no, some people said maybe. But, like, I think you kind of, to really know, you need to get through the second half just to be sure.
Yeah, and I am down to watch the second half. I just, I'm not sure I'm going to like it very much.
I think that just about does it for part one of Big Bad Beetleborgs. Like, this was a short one, but that's because not a whole lot that's really there to discuss happens in this first part. Like, again, we don't see the Beetleborgs at all. We don't even really get to the actual plot of the show. Because that's the thing. Like, the haunted house is just kind of the plot device that makes the story happen. It's not the plot, though.
The haunted house is the juice bar of this show. And it's a way more interesting juice bar.
I almost would have liked to have seen them not have the two kids that sort of call them chickens. I would have liked to have seen something happen where they just came to the house on their own and then have the unliving be the main.
You could have excised Trip and Van entirely. Like, just make it so that Drew decided to go to the haunted house to impress the girl he had a crush on.
Yes, exactly.
And then, like, Joe and Roland came with him for moral support or whatever, and, like, yeah, then they run into the monsters and they find the secret room. Like, you could completely forego those bullies.
And I almost want to say that the monsters in this show are almost as entertaining as Bulk and Skull and Power Rangers over the course of the series.
I think that's kind of the thing, is Trip and Van are clearly there to play the Bulk and Skull role as being bullies, but they're just not good at it. No. Whereas the monsters, and this is something we won't get into too much in this or even in part two, but, like, the monsters are still going to try and eat the kids.
Yeah, that part, like, was really weird. Like, at least the vampire, Count Fangula, is trying to explicitly drink their blood.
I mean, he's a vampire. He can't help it.
It's almost like the running gag with Alf trying to eat the cat. And I just, oh my god, I just dated myself really bad with that one, because everybody's going to be like...
No, I watched Alf a lot.
We're probably going to have some listeners that will be like, what the hell is Alf?
What's an Alf?
I'm 31. He's an alien life form.
Yeah. Alien life form. I think a lot of people know what Alf is. I think if you really want to make people go, wait, what the fuck are you talking about? You have to bring up the Alf animated series.
Oh, man, yeah.
I don't know.
It's like a prequel that takes place in his home planet or something. Like, I don't know what the fuck.
I don't know.
Dude, I played the Alf game for the Sega Master System.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Was that any good?
No.
That was exactly the answer I was expecting.
I had a friend that had it. It was also the first place I played the Ghostbusters game from that era, the 8-bit Ghostbusters game for the Commodore 64. They ported it to everything, though.
I played that on the Commodore.
Was that the same Ghostbusters game that... Oh, no, that was like Ghostbusters 2 or something that was, like, infamously bad?
Yeah, the first one is weird. A lot of people hate it. It was a business simulation, kind of.
Yeah.
There's a game on Steam right now that is basically an updated version of that, but where you're a off-brand Ghostbuster in England. I forget its name. It's see if I can pop it up real quick.
It was weird though, because you had like a grid that you have to go to, like, different houses when they flashed, and
You had to buy your car. You had to upgrade your car.
Buy your traps and buy a vacuum cleaner.
There was a store that you bought Ghostbusters gear from, which was weird.
Yeah, I guess that's a weird. Is that a take anyone's done on Ghostbusters yet? Where
Ghost Control Inc. is what it's called.
Yeah, were there a Ghost Control?
Yeah, okay. Ghost Control Inc.
Is there like a spin on that where like the Ghostbusters equipment finally becomes like easy enough to produce that it just becomes something you can buy off the shelf like rat poison?
Not really.
Like, it's like, well, I've got ghosts. I'm gonna go buy a Ghostbusters brand trap. You know.
No, we're purely a service industry.
Okay.
You gotta call us to come by, but yeah, like there are some what's the word I'm looking for? Some charlatans that'll sell you like a Dreamcatcher or something that'll take care of your little ghost problem.
All right.
Yeah, the real money is treating the symptoms, is going on site, you know, having repeat calls, that kind of thing. You can't just sell a cure. Come on.
Well, I think that's about it for our discussion of Big Bad Beetleborgs Part 1. I think we'll have a lot more to say about Part 2. So before we get going, do either of our guests have anything they want to plug, anything they want to just tell the listener about to check out?
Well, if you guys want to know more about what we do here, you know, frankly, there have been a lot of wild stories in the media. So if you want to head on over to AtlantaGhostbusters.com, that'll take you to our Facebook page, and you can get to everywhere else from there. We're also ATL Ghostbusters on Twitter, or you can follow me at TankHammer on Twitter if you feel like doing that. I don't post a whole lot through my own account, but I do run the business account occasionally.
All right. Fantastic. And Greg, you got anything?
I don't have any specific websites or anything like that. I participate in a martial art called Haidong Gumdo. In case anybody wants to check that out, there's a bunch of videos we got online on YouTube right now for a bunch of demonstrations. So if ever you're interested in checking out something that involves a sword, check me out.
So what's the YouTube channel that can find that out?
Is Greg CMUN. So if you type that in, you will come to my channel, and I've got a bunch of demo videos from my martial arts club doing our thing, swinging our swords around and cutting paper and breaking sticks and stuff.
All right, and I'll try to include links to those things in our show notes for this. And remember, if you want to get a hold of us, you can find us on Twitter at teenswithtude. You can send us an email at teenswithtude@gmail.com. You can join our Facebook group, Teenagers with Attitude. And hey, if you could do us a little favor, maybe leave us a review on iTunes. You know, we'd really appreciate it. I think that's about it. So thank you for joining us, guys. And for Teenagers with Attitude, I have been Mike.
I've been Matt.
I've been Greg.
I've been Joe.
And may the power protect you. Always.
We're ready to believe you.
This is a dream. Let's make it a good one. Let's be superheroes.
If you dare, they might be big and mean, but you're the biggest, baddest team. gang, take a roll. Superheroes, 1, 2, 3, Beetleborgs, the what you see.